Hello and welcome to the Coach's Corner, a weekly podcast brought to you by South Florida Charter Chapter of the International Coaching Federation. Our goal is to engage, motivate, and inspire. A lot has happened over the past few years, including the COVID pandemic, the global lockdown, civil unrest, climate change, and the Great Resignation. A half decade ago, we may have had a pretty good idea of what the world was going to look like. But now, things have changed, and we need to recalibrate and recalculate to find and define our new normal. Join me as we connect and collaborate with coaches, thought leaders, visionaries, and futurists as we explore opportunities and possibilities as we reimagine the future. Hello, I'm Jimmy Glenos, Vice President of Programming for ICF South Florida, and welcome to the Coach's Corner. Before we get into our conversation, I'd like to invite you to visit our ICF South Florida website so you can learn more about our benefits and program offerings. To learn more, visit icfsouthflorida.org and check out all of our calendar of events to see what interests you and join us as a guest. When you go to register, remember to use the promo code PODCAST. I hope to see you soon at our next event. This week, I sat down with a new friend of mine, Aaron Curran. Aaron is an accountant, a life coach, and an accomplished author. Her cryptically and hilariously titled Hate Your Way to Happiness is a raw and revealing memoir that will leave you laughing, crying, and feeling empowered. In our conversation today, we discuss the balance of Buddhism in the workplace, the real definition of karma, and even the joy of tweaking recipes. I really enjoyed our conversation, and I hope you do too. And now, my conversation with Aaron Curran. Hello, Aaron. It is so good to see you today. How are you?
I'm good, Jimmy. How are you? Thanks.
I am doing great as always. I'm coming with a lot of energy today, so good luck with you.
Am I in trouble?
Maybe. We're going to find out, aren't we? So you and I, we've actually just met a couple of times. I don't know that much about you. Would you mind sharing a little bit more about who you are, what you do, and how you got into coaching?
I am actually a South Florida native, born and raised. Both of my parents met, they both went to high school here. They met at my grandfather's car dealership, and the rest, as they say, is history. So I am a Broward County native. I've not lived here all my life, but I'm back here because this just feels right. I love the multicultural vibe, and there's so much to do and fascinating people everywhere. So yeah, I grew up in South Florida, moved up to Gainesville to finish high school. I've traveled around a lot, and I've always had an interest in the way people work. Like, knowing so many different people from so many different places, you can just naturally see that we're just geared a little bit differently. So I've always been interested in philosophy and, you know, Eastern studies, Buddhism, those sorts of things. And I just kind of naturally have come to this space of coaching. People used to say that I should be an attorney because I like taking things apart and creating arguments, but I also like kind of directing people, telling people what to do. So a little bossy. My day job, I actually ended up going into accounting because I'm really good with numbers. And my job title is officially controller, so it fits. But I've been doing accounting for 30 years. I started doing personal development probably 12 years ago. And inside of personal development, if you've ever done anything like the Landmark Forum or self-discovery, gratitude training, after you go through the first and second course, they give you opportunities to support the courses, and how you do that is through coaching. Hmm. So I've been coaching unofficially for probably 12 years now. About a year and a half ago, I just decided to make it official. So last year I started the Accomplishment Coaching year-long training program, and I just graduated from it 3 weeks ago. So here we are.
Wow. Congratulations on that, Aaron. That's fantastic.
Thank you.
So is accomplishment coaching, is that with Christopher McAuliffe?
Yes. The very same.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
You interviewed him last week on one of the masterclasses.
Exactly. I had I known that, I would have made sure you showed up for him. But
I had it on my calendar, but I got caught up at work. So I'll go back and listen to the recording if it's available.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, it was so good too. I was so there were so many great things in there about I can't even remember, but I remember the title of the talk was Creation Really. So it was like creation period, really period. And I was like, I don't understand what that's supposed to mean, but okay. And it was great. So we were trying to figure out like, how do you create things from the future? So listen to the recording. And for anybody else out there who didn't show up for the masterclass, definitely find out how to get the recording and we'll get that to you. That's so cool. So accomplishment coaching with Christopher McAuliffe. And
yes,
you're a brand new graduate. So congrats on that. I love it.
Thank you.
So Broward County native. I love it. I am not a Broward County native, but I'm from Chicago, but raised in Plantation, which is Broward County. Yeah. And then I've lived almost my entire life in Broward County, whether it's Deerfield Beach or Plantation or Fort Lauderdale, Las Olas area. So I've spent a lot of time in Broward County.
It's not as fast and chaotic as Miami, and it's not as slow and I'm going to get in trouble for this stuffy as Palm Beach.
So, all right, I sense an interesting juxtaposition here of being an accountant and a controller for so many years and practicing Buddhism for a number of years as well. Those two things are sort of like opposite sides of the seesaw.
They kind of are, yeah.
Help me figure out how that, I understand how it works because the seesaw works perfectly.
Yeah, it's balance. Well, if you think about the yin and yang, the circle where half is white and the other half is black, life is about balance. And accounting was something that I did because I was good at numbers and it made sense and I could always find an answer. So very precise, very exact. You're able to prove whether you did it right or not. There's no argument about it. It is what it is. And at the same time, there's this messiness to life that just doesn't necessarily fit that. The business runs the way the business runs. And the accountant is tasked with trying to make it all make sense for the owners. It doesn't always make sense. People think that accounting is 2 + 2 = 4, and it is. But then there's this whole area of tax that's messy and horrible, and I never, ever, ever wanted to go there. And I also was never really interested in the corporate, here we go with that stuffy word again, that side of accounting. I never did public accounting. I'm not a CPA. I've always worked with small to mid-sized companies where I can work directly with the owner to help them organically grow their business, to have my fingers in a little bit of everything to see how it all fits together and works. And at the end of the day, Buddhism seems like this big, untouchable kind of it's a nebulous thing to Westerners. But at the end of the day, it's all about cause and effect. It's about personal responsibility. It's about you rob a bank, you go to jail. Now, does it always add up to that? No, not necessarily. You smoke cigarettes, there's a stronger probability you're going to get cancer. You take this action, you will probably get this result. When you plant corn, you're going to receive a crop. And if you plant a certain amount, performing certain actions, it leads to certain results fairly reliably. And you can calculate how that goes. And so Buddhism actually fits really well with my left brain leaning for the majority of the beginning of my life. And it's helped me really transition into the right brain, softer side, emotionally intelligent person that I seem to be evolving into.
So that's super interesting. So it sounds like you're saying that with the yin and the, and I'll say it in my Western way, yang, the yin and yang, it's supposed to be yin and yang?
Yes.
Okay. Then maybe
it's pronounced different ways. It's like neither.
So
say it how you like.
It's okay. In my Western American accent, I'll say yin and yang. So it sounds like you said, if you smoke cigarettes, there's a more preponderance that you're probably going to get lung cancer. If you rob a bank, you're probably going to go to jail. So it almost sounds like karma, but that's a different philosophy altogether, right?
No, karma is a part of it, but karma is not what people think. Most people think that karma is your future is set in stone. It's already been written someplace. The truth of the matter is karma is there's a particular direction that your life is heading, and it's going to continue going that way as long as you keep doing those things that you do. So karma is basically the calculus of all of your actions and results. It's if you're heading in a particular direction because you always tend to wake up a little bit later, you always tend to run late getting to work, you're always kind of sliding through life and not preparing, being more of a grasshopper, or you're always being an ant and always preparing thoroughly, and you're always making sure that everything ties, there's another side of life that you're missing. Karma is when I look at my life at the end of the day, the only person I can blame for where I am is me. It's not the external circumstances, because somebody else in the world has exactly the same circumstances and accomplished something different with it. So Buddhism and karma really point us in the direction of our ability to create powerfully, kind of like you were saying earlier, that it's creation really, when you understand that how you think and how you speak and how you view the world creates the world. The world is a reflection. The environment is a reflection of you, your thoughts, your beliefs, your contexts, your actions that are the result of all of those things that you've collected through your life. So karma is not this immutable thing. Karma is actually something that evolves with you. You can just say, well, you know, it's really too bad because I was born in this part of town. I lived in Lauderhill when I grew up. It's not a really good, you know, socioeconomic area. I didn't have the opportunity that one did. I didn't go to this school. I didn't have these parents. And you can attach your results to the outside, which is fine, but you're never going to get what you want. And it's going to continue going the way that you've been pre-programmed for it to go, which is exactly how coaching really appeals to me, because I've met some really amazing people. It's like, once I know, okay, I can change the result that I get. I can change my karma. I can shift my life. How do I do that? Who do I need to talk to? Who do I see that is committed to that? Who do I know that has created that sort of a shift for themselves in their life? And that got me started after 23 years of practice in Buddhism. You know, I started in personal development 12 years ago for the same reason, trying to figure out how to get my hands on the levers to change the direction that my ship is sailing in.
Gotcha. So karma is less like predetermination and more like the laws of inertia.
Yeah.
So what is in motion tends to stay in motion. What is at rest tends to stay at rest. And so karma really is more a product of inertia. And just like you can shift the velocity or the vector of a moving object, that's where the coaching comes in, right? So coaching is that you've got this ball sitting still, and the coaching comes in and nudges, kicks or shifts in some way this ball to move in a different direction. And then even once it's moving, it's not predetermined and destined to go there, because you can always just give it a little nudge in another direction wherever the client wants to go. Is that
exactly
fair estimation? Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, and also one of the beautiful things is, because nothing is set in stone, if I've been on the path that I've been on for 30 years, I have no idea what it's going to be like to change what time I wake up in the morning or what path I drive to work. These are simplistic examples, but when I change one tiny little thing, then I will be able to see how it impacts what goes on around. And with that information, then I can test something a little bit different. And so then you get your fingers in the sauce. Like when I try a recipe, I love cooking. When I try a recipe the first time, I follow it exactly. And then I see what I like and I see what I don't. And then I start tinkering with it. And so life becomes so much more fun when you get that you can tinker with it and see where it goes.
Oh, wow. That's so cool. I love that idea.
It really, And the other aspect is, you know, you mentioned the coach, there's the ball and the coach sort of nudges it. Yeah. If the ball isn't willing, if the person whose life it is, isn't really interested in recognizing self as source, it can't work. Part of the job as coach is to help my client recognize their hand in it, to put a pen in their hand and create them as author, because our society isn't geared to teach us that, to reinforce that. The movies that we see, the programs that we watch, the books that we read, most of the philosophies that we study, most people think karma's written in stone. I can't do anything about it. Woe is me. I'll just drink my six pack and watch what's on television. But like, that's not truth. And so my job as coach is to help to support someone. It's kind of like the Matrix. Somebody who gets a little inkling of an idea that there's something just a little bit off and something else is possible, and coach them through the process when they decide to take the red pill.
Holy cow. That's that's deep. But yeah, I agree. The coach is so instrumental in helping to see a new perspective of what could possibly be, because like you said, if we look at everything as deterministic or fatalistic, and well, woe is me, this is just where we are because of quote karma, but they've got to decide, am I interested in taking either pill? And yeah, if they're not, then they're not, you know, maybe someday. And when that day comes, one of us has to be there to help them feel good about their next move, right? And empowering them to do that next move if that's what they want to do.
Yeah. Sometimes too, the desire for change might bring up recognition that you don't currently have the capacity or the ability. And so there's something else that needs to be done or taken on first. Yeah. But you don't know that until you try, because you've never done it before.
Yeah, it's hard, right? You don't know what it's like if you don't, like you were saying, you know, do I take a different route to work? Do I wake up at a different time? So if I start learning to wake up at 5 a.m. and get my day started, how different is that from waking up at 6:30 or 7? Well, it's really, really different.
Seriously different, especially if you approach it from a structured place.
Right. Yeah. Don't just wake up and be like, I'm awake. No, have a structure, whether it's reading, whether it's planning your day, whether it's exercising, whether it's whatever, going to work early, whatever the thing is, you know, playing with the kids or yeah.
You mean I can't just scroll through Facebook an extra hour?
You can 100%. No, you absolutely can. And at 9 o'clock, tell me how you're feeling.
Yeah. There's a fantastic book that I read that I was introduced to at the end of 2019, right after I finished a personal development course called Gratitude Training. So my mind and my heart were wide open. I went to this marketing seminar in Texas, and Hal Elrod was one of the key speakers. And he was talking about his book, The Miracle Morning. Mm. I did The Miracle Morning for 550 days. And it was super powerful because of the structure, because of how I created my morning with such intention and faith in the process. I was able to really create a shift in how my entire day goes.
Wow.
And so my mornings are absolutely sacred to me now.
That's cool. What time do you wake up?
Usually around 5 a.m.
Yeah. I'm still struggling with it. I try. I really, really try.
Again, if you don't know why you're doing it, then it's more of a challenge.
For sure.
If there's any wiggle room at all, then snooze is an option.
That sounds, you know what? That's really good motivation for me to get back on waking up at 5 o'clock in the morning, because I know when I was doing it before, it was fantastic. And I was by 7:30, I'm like, man, I can't believe what an amazing day this is already. So yeah, this is a good conversation for me, because it's motivation to get back in there and hit that, not hit snooze, but get up and get on my feet at 5 a.m. and start making it happen. So thank you, Aaron, for coaching me through that. I am going to be a 5 a.m.er and look at my Miracle Morning. So I haven't read that book though. I've read the 5 a.m. Club, but I haven't read Miracle Morning. I assume it's similar in nature to getting up early and putting together a structure for the morning. Is that fairly correct?
It is creating a structure for the morning. One of the other things that I've seen in my travels through, you know, checking stuff out because I love seeing how other people do things. There's somebody on YouTube that goes around and tries out the morning routines of famous people. He figures out what Steve Jobs did, and he figures out what, you know, whoever did. And I remember I watched him. One of his videos was Pablo Picasso. Picasso woke up at 11 a.m. every day. He would go have lunch, drink wine, hang out with his friends for several hours. And then like 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, he would lock himself in his studio most days. And he would stay up until 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning just painting. For him, that worked. Again, when you know what game you're playing, not 5 a.m. is not appropriate for everyone. It works for a lot of us because of the structure of Western commerce, shall we say. But if you're a painter and it doesn't matter and your creative flow is in the afternoon, create your structure such that that is supported.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
That's the flow side of the flow and structure, because the structure has to fit your flow for it to be effective.
Wow.
And you can't let go of the structure, because if it's too much flow, then you're lying to yourself because you say you can't help it.
Right. Exactly. Well, I don't think I'm ready for the Picasso morning, but I'm definitely down for getting up earlier and making things happen, because I know from past experience, it's really, really helpful. And I love the energy that I have throughout the rest of the day. So, oh, that's good. I'm gonna get back in there. So cool. speaking of different books, I know in my research in getting ready for this interview, you have actually written a book, which I am very, very happy for. The title is interesting, and you're going to have to explain this to me. The title is Hate Your Way to Happiness. Tell me a little bit more about what Hate Your Way to Happiness means, because I'm confused.
So do we get bleeped if there's profanity on the podcast?
maybe. I'll bleep it out. You can swear away, right, and I'll just put the bleep on it. That's good.
The title of the book is Hate Your Way to Happiness, Cultivating Self-Love Even When You Feel Like Ish. So it was, I was working with a coach at the time. I was doing my morning, miracle morning process. This was like the beginning of 2020. And my coach, she was an accomplishment coach, really powerful, like brilliant at listening to what I was saying behind what I was saying. And I hit a point where I was dealing with a lot. And I came onto a call and I was complaining about something again. And she says, in just this perky, disaffected tone that she has, "Well, Erin, why don't you just hate your way to happiness?" And I went, "Wait, what?" And at first it was a slap in the face, but it was also like 10 days prior, I had been praying for an answer because I was so stuck. And it was just the perfect thing for me to hear, because I didn't even know what it meant, but I knew it was a book. And so I wrote it down and I said to her, "I'm claiming that's my book." She laughed and said, "Yeah, I get it. It's perfect." And then I started. Now, remember, this is in May of 2020. COVID lockdowns had been going on for about 2 months. Was dealing with, like at that point, I was deciding whether I was going to divorce my second husband. My mother had dementia, was in the process of, you know, she was in a home, and there was a lot of, it was a very emotional time. And so because I was working remotely, I still had my job. I was still fully doing the controller thing, was able to work from home. I was taking walks every morning. And as I would walk, I was just using my iPhone with the voice recorder and just recording my thoughts, thinking about Buddhism, thinking about personal development, thinking about all of the things that I had read or seen or heard in the previous day or two or five, and things would come to me. And so it took me about 6 months of recording. And then in November, I connected with somebody that I knew was a book coach, and I hired her to keep me accountable. And I spent 6 weeks transcribing all of those notes. And at first I was thinking I was going to be creating some sort of a book where I was telling people how to do something. And she said, no, you need to leave it just like a journal, like just the way it is, which it's awesome because I just got to transcribe it and didn't have to think about how to make it into some great lesson. You can take from it what you get. It's also, for the faint of heart, it's profanity laden. It's just me at my best and me at my worst. And some days where I'm shaking my fist and screaming at God or Buddha or the universe or whoever you want to call it. And other days where I was just elated and over the moon. And as I was transcribing, that was when I really got that the reason why I hadn't been able to break through before was because every time I would start to really dig into something, the minute it got hard or the minute it got scary or the minute it got painful, I would back away thinking I was doing something wrong. What I got was that was exactly the point where I needed to lean in because I had to go through the hate. I had to go through the pain. What I wanted was on the other side. And there was a lesson in the process. And so hating your way to happiness is really being okay with being human about the process of evolving. Like, we don't know why we see the world the way we do. We were children when we created these programs based on some person having a bad day who said something that we interpreted as us being bad or wrong or not enough. And we now carry it with us and hold it up as a gauge to judge every single thing that we say and do all day, every day. And it's a scary thing to go back to that five-year-old and tell her or him, it's okay. We're going to open that door and we're going to see if the monster is really in there. So hating your way to happiness it's a process of leaning in. Hating your way to happiness is trusting that everything is perfect just the way it is.
A remarkable admission of vulnerability there. And I thank you so much for sharing that with me today.
You're welcome.
Cow, I love that story and I love how it evolved out of a comment from your coach. Why don't you just hate your way to happiness? And you're like, hey, I think I might do something. But the perseverance of putting your notes into voice memos every day. Gosh, and I love how you decided to do it just as a journal, as opposed to a personal development thing, because that would be the process oriented part of our brain says, I went through this and I can help others get through it. Here's how I did it. Mm-hmm. And which is awesome for you, but it might not be awesome for them. And so just laying it out there in that, here's what happened. Here's the story. Figure out what means something to you and what you can do with it. And, bless you.
Well,
your way. And I'm here for you. If you want me to take that journey with you, I just love it.
At the end of the day, as I was pulling it all together, there were two things that I wanted to make sure of. One, as a part of my commitment to my Buddhist practice of self being responsible, there was not any place in the book where I ever laid someone out to dry. I remember when my boss found out I wrote a book, she laughed and said, "So am I in it?" And I laughed and said, "Yes. But I want you to know that I might start out a chapter yelling about you, but by the end of it, I'm digging into why I created that experience for myself." So that's one aspect. I never left it. I feel like I never left it in a space where I was blaming someone else for where I was. And then the other thing was, even though it's my journal and it was really scary publishing something that is so raw and so real, I created journaling prompts at the end of nearly every chapter so that the reader can actually reflect on their life in a particular direction or through a particular lens to help them see how they can better themselves or create a different result.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah. A journal prompting a journal.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Wow. Huh. Well, I've got to read that book now. Send me a copy. Can we get the book on Amazon, or where can we find Hate Your Way to Help Happiness?
You can go to hateyourwaytohappiness.com. There is a link. You can get a free morning ritual guide, speaking of creating morning routines, or you can go to Amazon and you can Google Hate Your Way to Happiness, Erin Curran. I think one thing I didn't anticipate is the search engines don't like the word hate. So it might take you a couple of tries to get to it.
Yeah.
But it is out there. So if you're not able to search Amazon, just go to hateyourwaytohappiness.com and there is a link.
That's awesome. Of course, yeah. And it's probably better to go through your website anyway. That way we get to your site and we get to learn more about you that way too. That's awesome.
True. Yeah, I do have a blog there. So yeah, check it out.
Fantastic. All right. Well, I'm going to start reading. I can't believe I haven't already. Usually I do a little bit better homework, but there's a lot going on. I so appreciate you being on the podcast today and sharing that story and being so open, so vulnerable. And I am genuinely very interested and I can't wait to get into the book myself because I think I'm going to get a lot out of that. That just sounds fantastic. I do have one more. Yeah, absolutely. I do have one more question. I'm curious about, because we did talk about the future. What do you hope to see or expect to see in the future of coaching?
It's a very good question. In the future of coaching at large, or?
However you want to interpret it.
I think that we're in interesting times. You know, the Irish blessing, may you live in interesting times. So too many people have said it. I'm Irish. So yeah, you can blame some of us. We live in interesting times. We live in times when people don't know who or what to trust. And I think that the future of coaching is really creating a space to allow people to experience and express themselves for who and what they are individually. But not only that, I firmly believe that when I have the freedom to explore and express myself deeply and truly, then I can give you the freedom to explore and express yourselves freely. I can't be me 100% the way I choose to be if I'm attempting to impose any of my beliefs or my thoughts or philosophy on you. So coaching is really creating that practice of trusting yourself to be who you are and trusting other people to be who they are, and all of it being okay. Because the moment that I am responsible for myself, my life, my actions, then I'm not worried about what somebody else is off over there doing. I'm more concerned to help give them a leg up so that they can have the same opportunity.
Holy cow. I can't think of a better way to describe coaching. That's it right there. That is absolutely beautiful. Erin Curran, thank you so much for that. Those words of brilliance. Gorgeous.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me on. It's been my pleasure to chat with you this morning.
I'm so glad to hear that. Besides hateyourwaytohappiness.com, how else can we find out more about you?
I am on Facebook and Instagram. If you look for Hate Your Way to Happiness or Erin Curran, you'll be able to find me. I do Reiki circles. I do vision board classes. I'm partnering with some different energy healers to create events. I have an office at Oakland and Federal. So, you know, I'm always looking to create something to help raise vibration and help people just really be happier.
Wow. Thank you so much for helping to raise the energy levels and bring us to a more positive sense of self every single day. Erin, thank you so much. This was just a pleasure to be with you today.
Thank you.
What a great conversation. It's always so educational and inspirational to talk with colleagues and learn from their experiences. That's why it's so important to continue to collaborate with others. And that is one of the best reasons to consider working with a certified coach. Working with a certified coach opens a whole new space to learn, grow, and design your future the way you want to. To learn more about what coaching is and how it can help you, please visit our website at icfsouthflorida.org. There you'll find educational resources, our events calendar, and our coaches directory. We hope you'll find exactly what you're looking for. And if you like what you see, consider becoming a member. We'd love to welcome you to our community. Well, that's it for now. Thanks again for joining us in the ICF South Florida Coaches Corner. Until next week, take care and be well.